y'all. This is Megan at Motorcycles and Misfits at the Recycle Garage here in Santa Cruz. A little bit of a change up this week. Liza is not feeling so well and can't talk as much. Poor Liza.
as hard as that is for people to believe.
So, like I said, this is Megan. We got Liza here.
Hey.
Jake.
Hey.
Lucas.
What's good?
Doug.
Yo.
Adrian.
Hello.
And Donut.
Howdy.
So, let's talk about what we did today. I didn't do any work.
We all didn't really do shit
today.
Yeah,
we didn't do anything.
I think Jake did
Jake
the most.
Was the only one that did stuff.
Yeah.
That almost killed
it. It was kind of just social hour today.
Yeah.
You did my valves.
I checked his valves.
So, Jake, want to tell us what you did today? You were the only one that really did anything, so go for it.
I didn't do a whole lot. I took the back wheel off of a 49cc motor scooter. And I neglected to put it back together properly, so when Lucas went to ride it, the back brake froze up and almost killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's Lucas's fault. I'm blaming
We've
you.
We've been discussing this for a little while now.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. Whenever you get on a vehicle that's been just rebuilt, what do you do first?
Make sure a boy test rides it first.
Right.
Turn the key.
Before the boy test rides it.
You can't blame me.
It's his responsibility.
I'm out there risking my neck for you guys.
And
so
I just
want to
add that what Lucas was test riding, we've dubbed the death trap. So when you're riding something that's been dubbed the death trap, you probably should check it out first.
Well, I've at least determined it lives up to its name.
So yeah. Far.
Should have checked the brakes.
Yeah, so far.
And it even has working front brakes that I don't know why you didn't use those.
The front brakes did not work at all. I pulled the front brake lever and it just went all the way into the handlebars with nothing. And so I was like, okay, well, it has like another brake, right? And I tested it and it was okay. And then I rode it down the street. And I'm like, okay, I gotta stop now. And I start pulling it, and then it just like goes pow, and then just jumps all the way out, and the back wheel just locks up and throws me forward. I'm like, fuck! So, yeah, I very narrowly avoided eating.
Sorry.
Shit. It only goes like 10 or 15 miles an hour. So
that's
I guess
all
it
needs to go.
But it did work after you put the belt in. Then, obviously.
Yeah.
Cool.
You
have to be real gentle when you try and get up to speed. Doesn't it have like a velocity clutch or something?
It's a centrifugal clutch.
Right. If you just turn the throttle, the clutch will slip. So you have to just turn it real slow to get up to speed, but it'll still work.
Yeah.
It's not slow like a CBR.
RR, no. And then Doug, you did some valves.
Yeah, I did some valves check. Adrian didn't bring the shims. So
he brought the baby instead.
His bike is still in pieces.
I brought my kid instead.
Yeah.
So
we had our youngest recycler at the garage today, and he was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Lug nut.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we've already got a lug nut.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we have a lug nut.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, name's Tegan.
Mm-hmm. Donut, did you do anything today?
I did the air in my bike.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I added 2 PSI to my back tire.
Why did you add 2 PSI? You were running at 31.
Is that 36?
Really?
Each one of those dots is 2.
Oh, yeah.
All of our viewers were using these very small little what do you call them?
Gauges. They're like gauges. The pen-sized gauges that you stick inside the stem. And I had one and it broke, and that sucked. But Liza was nice enough to give me a free one. So,
so here's a question for the group: how often do you notice pressure changes in your tires? Like, how much does it have to be off for you to notice them?
I knew mine were really low. I just didn't know how low, and I was too lazy to check.
Well, how much did it wind up being off?
Well, I usually ride 36 rear, 32 front, and I was 31 rear, 30 front. So I knew there was a pretty big difference. It, like, you can tell it corners and it feels planted, but it just has no tip, you know? So it feels squishy and floppy. So I could tell it was low, and I'm like, man, I got to go to the garage and pump these up, you know? So, yeah, but that took a month for, I think, I didn't ride it for like a month. And then they just got really low, so I assumed they were low anyway.
Okay, so about 3 PSI, 4 PSI, and you were noticing differences?
Yeah.
I usually run the rear tire and the DRZ at around 31 or so, and I noticed it started sticking better and better and better over the months, and then I finally tested it, and it was, like, down to, like, 25 in the summertime. Wait. So, you know, like, I love this, and I can, you know,
who is here?
You can tell it's grabbing. But it was, yeah, I didn't, it took about 5 PSI to notice.
About 5 PSI?
Yeah, but, you know, it's, the thing's almost flat all the time anyway, so.
I don't know. That's all I'm going to say, is I really, I
you don't
probably
know.
Check.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, about 5 PSI, start slipping around.
Yeah, the same for myself. I know it's probably about 4 PSI or so. I can start feeling it, and then it'd be like, okay, you can't tip in, you can't tip in. Especially my V-Strom, it was very much, okay, I can't get into this corner, I can't get into this corner. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, my front tire is at 20 PSI. That would do it.
Nothing, remember that, what was that guy's name that came up for a ride, and he was like, my back tire feels kind of, I don't know, something doesn't feel
Trevor?
All that right, and I looked at it, and it was flat.
Trevor.
Like, it was completely flat. I don't know how he even got it to pergolate like that.
I remember this story.
Yeah.
Hey, all, Zoe just got here. Zoe, do you want to
Zoe.
Yeah, Zoe.
Adrian?
You mean the milk crate?
Yeah, milk crate and the milk jug go together.
Sweet.
That, by the way, is what we're sitting on here.
Hey, when in doubt, use a milk crate.
There you go.
Milk crates and motorcycles go together.
Now might be a good time to
one after the other.
Have a word from our new sponsor, Moto Bandito. Here we go.
Introducing Moto Bandito Spit Polish Cleaner. It's the ultimate detailer in a can for motorcycles, ATVs, scooters, mopeds, bicycles, tricycles, wagons, and that little thing you scoot around in as a baby. It cleans road grime, bugs, grease, hose scum, bodily fluids, and dust, leaving behind a showroom shine that helps to protect against ozone and dirtbags that touch your shit. Available in 12-ounce, 16-ounce, 18-ounce, and 24-ounce spray cans, and for those big jobs, 5-gallon buckets. Go to motobandito.com to order yours today.
And we're back from our Moto Bandito sponsor. So the other thing I kind of wanted to talk about tonight is recently we've gotten a lot of emails. Well, not a lot, but an upsurge in emails from people that like to listen to us. The first was a guy named Miles up in SF, and he has a Give It a Shot garage. It's his own residential garage, and he videotapes himself fixing up bikes in his garage and drinking beer and just hanging out.
I actually saw a couple episodes of that like a month ago.
Yeah.
It was really, really funny.
Doug and I watched some of them, and all we had to say was, please put on a helmet when you test ride a bike, especially
yeah.
after running your bike through There's your like wheel through a bunch of oil.
Backing out of the garage, and you can see his foot slipping on spilled oil, and he's like, okay, here's the test ride, and they just go right down the street with no helmet on or anything. I'm like, whoa, dude.
They disappear, and it's all like, yeah.
One of his videos is an old mini bike that he gets running. I want to invite him down to come drag race our mini bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
That's an official invite. I know they've listened to our podcast.
And
so.
I know. I sent him a message, too, about coming down. He said he's going to be in Santa Cruz the first weekend of January, and I told him to go ahead and bring his recording stuff down. Hang out and join us on the podcast.
So you have to be here.
Hey, Miles.
Sunday.
Good, cool watching your videos.
Sunday.
Yeah. And let's see. We also had a message from a guy named Bernie in Dallas. And he had a request for us to talk about the MSF course because he is a former trainer or coach or whatever that is. So, hey, Bernie.
I think it's instructor is the word you're looking for.
Whatever. So, and then, Lucas, you're going to read the email from Bernie?
Yeah, if you had set it up on your phone. I was ogling Megan's bike porn pick of the week.
That's later.
Ogling.
So,
yeah.
We'll have to talk about that.
Slightly better than
the first one.
Second.
That's right. cover it?
Random beatbox.
Well,
break.
Bernie wanted to be the first to get the free T-shirt, but alas, he did not.
Came in a cool third, I think.
Yeah.
Cool third.
Ollie over in England did. But he said, hella great podcast, very Cali.
Hella.
Keep it up. Love listening.
Right. That's on. Definitely Northern.
Yeah, he was really cool, and I responded to him and said I appreciate him contacting us, and he's the one who said that he's the MFS writer.
MSF.
And actually, he said he's a former MFS writer, and then he says, did they think the MSF class was worthwhile? So
I think it's a typo, dude.
Yeah, I'm reading off of this. My teleprompter told me to say that.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
And he also brought up the point that track days are great and you can learn a lot about control, but street skills are different.
Right.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So that was nice to get that encouragement from him, too.
Please, everyone, do not ride like you're on a track on the street.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's see. I know I've taken the MSF course. Lucas, have you?
Yeah, I had to. I got my endorsement. The rule in California, for those of you who aren't from here, is that if you are under the age of 21 and you want to get your motorcycle endorsement, you have to take a state-approved MSF class, which I think is hosted in cooperation with the Highway Patrol.
Yeah.
And at the class teaches you the basics of how to ride a motorcycle.
They provide you with bikes. They're all under 250 cc's.
I think they're 250 or less.
Yeah.
They usually have like some old Bandits or something.
I think at my class there were Rebels, some weird Honda, like 125 dirt bike things.
Yeah. If you're about to take the class, make sure you pick the dual sport because the little Rebels or Cruisers or whatever have a really crap turning radius. So just a note for all you who are
and
who
I know
might be
Zoe,
able to do it.
You have two, right?
Yeah.
And Adrian and Donut. Yeah, we have all taken the MSF course and graduated, so
I did not.
Yeah. Liza's
I'm old.
Doug didn't either.
I did not do it either.
Yeah. You two are the odd ones out. So I don't know. What do you think about
I actually took the driving test because that shit was hard. We didn't get just shooed through the door. So
we had to take kind of a test at the end.
That shit was harder.
I don't know.
I
what do you guys think
so you
about that?
I did the lollipop. And I actually put my foot down, and the chick was like, oh God, just come back and do it again. So it was cool. She was cool. But yeah, second time I did it, no problem.
I have to be honest that I rode for 12 years before I got a license.
Yay.
So by the time I went to go take the test, I was quite good.
And you had all the bad habits.
Yes. Yeah, I rode for many years. I just never... No, I take it back. I repeatedly got permits.
Yeah.
Because you could just go take a test, get a permit, and that's all you needed.
Right, it's good
and
for
I
a year.
And I moved around to different states. And I even got pulled over once in Boston, and they had no idea what a... But I had a California license, and they didn't know what a M1 license in California looked like. And there's so many students there from all over the world in Boston. They just took my word for it. But
so
yeah,
they came back with the Massachusetts license to California. They went, oh, you're endorsed, and they just put the M1 on it.
Yeah, so, but for me, my generation, there was no... Wait, we're calling it an MSF now, is that it?
That's what it is, Motorcycle Safety
Foundation.
There wasn't one. When I learned you suckered somebody into letting you borrow their bike and you hit the road, there was no helmet law. There was nothing.
There was no gear either.
Yeah, that's why when I was 12, I learned on a GS650.
God.
Jeez.
And, I mean, for me... I'd say it's debatable. Here, my question is, how prepared is everyone once they pass that MSF class? How prepared are you for the road?
That's
really
a good question.
Mm-hmm. I think you don't have the skills ingrained in you yet. I mean, you've got the basic theory and knowledge, but
you have to get it beat in your head. I mean, that's the only thing.
Practice, practice, practice.
You can know what you're doing, but unless you have experience, you can't utilize your own knowledge. I mean, you can read up on books about how to be a good rider. You can watch Twist of the Wrist 100 times until you get out there on the road and you try it out, get that muscle memory down, get the bad habits out of your system. You're still going to be, flopping around like a noob. Yeah. So
Also, I mean, the MSF will teach you how to survive on the street. They will also teach you what you need to know at the time to become a better rider. I mean, I went through the MSF a while ago. I don't use all those same skills anymore. Mm-hmm. I use a different set now. But had I started riding like I ride now, back when I took the MSF, I'd be road pizza. So they taught you the skills you need right then to survive enough to learn the other skills you
sure.
need.
Sure.
Right. It's a good starting point.
And it's not as if they're, you know, just shooing people through the door either. I mean, there was a guy at my class who showed up on a CBR 600, failed the test, and rode off on the CBR 600.
Yeah.
They won't hesitate to fail.
Same thing with me. There was a dude on a Harley that did the same thing. And then there was a chick there that dropped the Rebel. And then on the first Thursday or Saturday of riding, she dropped the Rebel. And then on the second Saturday of riding, she showed up on like a Harley 600 or an 800 or something. It was like, really? You couldn't keep the 250 up and you got a bigger bike? And she was like 5 foot nothing. I really, there was nobody. You could just tell that there was nobody saying, you might want to wait a little bit.
Right.
It, you know, it was a brand new bike. It didn't even have plates on it or anything. And so it's just like, I think that sometimes that the MSF course creates a bit of a false sense of security because you are riding in a parking lot and people go out and they go, I've got my motorcycle license. I can go tear up the hills. And that's not true.
And that's like a death wish. Right well, there.
You know, I think that sometimes it does create this kind of false sense of security and you know, well, it boosts their ego up and that's...
I disagree. I disagree. I think
really?
That... Well, I think there is that to an effect, to an extent. But I also think that MSF will show you if you are... like, because I firmly believe some people are just not meant to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Some people are just too uncoordinated to be safe. It's just a fact, right? And if you are one of those people and you take the class, you will find out very quickly you are one of those people and you will probably think, maybe I should give this up. Maybe I should not try to do this. So I think it could possibly also save people from getting in over their heads, you know?
In a controlled environment.
Exactly. Right. And they don't hesitate to fail you. If you screw up, they will kick you out, and you will have to start all over again from the beginning. There is a guy in my course who is doing it, and let's call him Squidly Diddly. And he was just being a hot boy. He's like, ha-ha, it's so cool, I'm on a bike, right? And he was just being stupid the whole time, and he ended up crashing into the back of someone else, and he, like, ran up them with, like, the front wheel going up their back. And it was insane. And they told him never to come back. So, yeah, they will kick you out if you are being an idiot.
Yeah,
if you're not.
The instructors are all volunteers. They all do it because they believe in safety and they want people to ride better.
And they won't pass you. They don't feel obligated to pass you. And like you said, they care about safety. So if they think you're unsafe, they will not let you go.
I want to make it clear that I don't think any of us, well, I'm the only one who hasn't taken it. I'm not bashing the class. Douglas. But I do ask the question, what does the class teach you that you can't learn from an experienced rider who spends an hour with you in the parking lot like I learned myself, you know? Yeah. And if it's the same, if it's teaching you the same, it's good because there are a lot of people who don't have a friend to teach them. They don't have a bike they can borrow to learn on. So it's a great resource. But I guess my question is, shouldn't it be more? Shouldn't it be like almost like a master class?
You know, they have more than one type of class, right? Mm-hmm. They offer a basic level course just to get your DL389, which is if you're under 21, you need it in order to get your permit. Or if you're over 21, sometimes if you need to get certified, you can go there too. But they offer like intermediate and advanced level courses too. So it's not just introductory rider training. You can get more out of the experience if you want it.
Yeah.
It's also very expensive.
Yeah, if you're over 21, the class is damn fucking expensive.
I paid $250.
But you paid $250? I paid like $100.
Well, it's not the cheapest thing in the world, but it's a good investment.
No, it definitely is a good investment.
No other route to learn how to ride.
So to address Liza's question of how this differs from a friend in a parking lot, you're right. Not everybody has that friend in the parking lot.
Right.
For example, when I started, I knew one other rider, and that was it. And she took me out and bought me all my gear. And that's what was her contribution. But to actually ride, I went to the MSF.
Right. I knew nobody when I started out. So I got a motorcycle. I was like, well, this is still dangerous. I took the MSF, got more skills, and I developed from there.
So for those of you who took it, what, now that you are more experienced riders, what do you think they can add to it that was missing?
Better bikes.
Practice.
No.
Practicing on that rebel was terrible.
More practice would be good, but I think one of the things they need to really stress more, they teach you a combination of, like, you know, technical skills and street survival skills. I think they really need to focus more on the street survival skills.
I'd agree because, with that.
Yeah, because going out there on the street as a noob rider, you have no idea how vulnerable you really are. And they need to beat that feeling of invincibility out of you.
Like every single car is out to get you. Every single pedestrian is going to run in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've been riding long enough and been on the street long enough to realize, like, sometimes it's just crazy. And you need to know that before you start riding. So I think they should really just be like, people be cray. In
Sometimes the army be cray.
Just going down to, like, three blocks down the road, it can be a gauntlet. You got cars wanting to pull out. You think they're going to pull out in front of you or turn left in front of you just because they don't see you, especially during the daytime.
So one other thing you mentioned, like, okay, we have the MSF, then what next? I know, as Lucas said, that there's the advanced rider courses. However, those are really not all out there all that often. It's, you know, they're scheduled once every couple months up in Oakland. They're really
Have to travel, and it's expensive, and, you know, it's like at a certain time, and it can be really inconvenient for some people. And if you live in, like, a rural area, like, fucking just give up, because there won't be one for like 500 miles, you know.
There is also track days have been mentioned beforehand, and actually there are a couple track schools who are now doing Road Rider 2.0 sort of classes. Mm-hmm. Where they are trying to do the street survival skills. And can I pimp somebody?
Doug, didn't you say that those are really, there's a lot of requirements for those, though?
For, like, track days, yes.
Okay.
Not for the Zoom Z2. Their Road Rider 2.0 stuff is geared towards street survival materials.
Okay. Well, Z2 is like a track day school, whereas like a regular track day is just show up with your bike and ride on it, you know?
That's pointless.
So, it is kind of, you might be able to learn something doing that, but if you want to get a day of track day instruction, it'll drastically improve your learning ability.
Exactly. So. If you go to a track, unless you are there to work on certain skills and you're at that level where you're honing your own skills, go for instruction.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that there is definitely a different, I think environment plays a lot in our learning ability, and I think actually going to a class and being, having actual instructors and having actual peers makes a big difference in your learning, rather than your buddy letting you borrow his bike in a parking lot. I think that the learning environment, I mean, it does play a big role
in how
we retain. It's just a different environment. I think for certain people.
Right, but what's the effect of the difference, though? What's the point?
Your buddy may suck at teaching.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, your buddy may suck at teaching, or, you know, they might not have the necessary skills to teach, or, you know.
The blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
Or they might not be able to instill that safety.
And I think definitely
not from a buddy. I mean, I think that's an important thing
to
mention.
Your buddy's going
to
be like, hey, dude, you got this. You can totally do it. Just, you know, put the clutch out a little bit, and then bam.
Go out there, get your knee
more
down.
Throttle.
Pull the throttle.
Pop a wheelie.
So, and there's a different environment. You're more likely to listen to the instructor who used to, you know, who's been doing this for 30 years, than your friend, too.
I think also MSF offers, kind of on a tangent to what you guys saying, it's like a standardization.
Yeah.
You can guarantee the quality will be good, because, well, like, whereas if you have someone else, you don't know how good of a rider they actually are. If you go to MSF, it's endorsed by the CHP. The people who are instructors there are very qualified. Mm-hmm. So you can guarantee that you're going to get the right info, you know.
Yeah. So, Jake, what are you going to do? I know you want to get your license ASAP, so there's only one way you can go with that, and that would be to take the MSF course. But what do you think on all of this?
Well, my parents are actually requiring me to take a motorcycle class before they're letting me even ride my moped around. but my godfather has been riding motorcycles for, I think, somewhere around 15 years. So I'm going to see if I can get him to teach me the basics.
I had something to say, and now I can't remember. I know what it is. Okay, so You mentioned, Donut, about the Rebel was a sucky bike to learn on.
Terrible.
What bike did all of y'all learn on? Was it the best bike? If you're going to be riding a Harley, is it worthwhile to learn on a Rebel? Or, like, I kind of felt like I started on heavy steel bikes. Once I came off of those, everything lighter was really easy.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it could go either way. I mean, what is the best bike? And then it gets into, we've had the conversation before, I don't want to go too long into it, but should you then be restricted for an intermediate time to a certain bike?
I feel like we went over some of the licensing stuff in the previous podcast.
Like tiered licensing?
Right.
Yeah.
Like they have in Europe?
So right, I don't want to go too in-depth, but I just want to compare what you're learning on to what you're then going to on the street. Is it appropriate or not?
Oddly enough, I started out on the Shadow before I took the MSF course, and then I took the MSF course and I got stuck on Rebel 250. Very happy I ended up getting a Shadow 600, because that was a bike that actually carried me through a lot of my riding history. Like, it was a comfortable bike. It was big enough for me. I'm a big person, but it was still pretty small. Had enough power to get me around where I wanted to go, and after being on a 250, I was like, oh, thank God.
I think I got put on one of those Honda, like, 125 things, and it was just so small, I couldn't get comfortable the whole time.
What kind of bike is this? Just describe it for the people listening.
I don't even know what it was.
Was it a dual sport?
Yeah, I think so.
They, like I said before, they do have some dual sports. I'm not sure what they are.
I don't know what they are either.
But they're pretty tall. They're, and, like, compared to the little cruisers.
Well, I mean, yeah.
The one I was on was pretty tall.
It felt small to me, and I just didn't, like, I didn't feel
bike.
Comfortable.
They have
I didn't
different
feel comfortable
ones
at all the whole time.
Depending where you go, they have different bikes, so it's kind of a crapshoot. But I would just once again advise people to take the tallest bike or the bike with the steepest rake.
There was this like short little Asian dude in my class, and he got on one of the dual sports, and he couldn't touch the ground.
Aww.
And they had to switch the bikes out partway through the riding. He was like, "I can't stop." Oh, sorry, man. I just remembered that. Yeah.
as much as it is good for people to learn on low displacement bikes, we are going to see a lot of, okay, you learn on a 250, and then a disreputable shop's going to push them onto a 600RR.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's just seen. Or you're like a young man like me, and you're like, I want to get that Gixxer 750. I'm going to be so cool, and I'm going to do wheelies and burnouts and be a stunt rider.
And I'm going to buy your parts off of eBay.
So R-A-D-Y-H. If
you plan on going out and riding a Harley or riding a sport bike or whatever is your long-term choice, should they not then put you immediately to teach you on a bike like that?
Who's got funding for that?
I don't think so.
I'm just wondering if learning on a little bike and then going and buying a big bike, if there's a gap that needs to be filled, why not do it when you have an instructor?
I think it's your responsibility.
I think the gap is more of your perception and how you can handle the bike. Like, it's more of like your experience on that type of bike versus overall knowledge of how to handle a bike on the road. Like, proper maneuvering, like if you lock your rear tire up so you don't high side yourself. You know, it's a lot of that kind of basic knowledge, and once you have that, you can kind of move over to other bikes a little easier.
Yeah, as well as don't forget, some people are learning how to clutch with their hand for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There were the majority of the class, I think there were only two or three people in my class that had riding experience. Everyone else had never even touched a motorcycle before. And the one that failed had been riding for like 6 years or something like that.
That's scary.
Yeah,
it was very scary. People just aren't meant to ride, you know?
You know, that's just how it goes. I don't know. And I think that everyone should be comfortable on almost, or at least moderately comfortable on anything that they get on. And, you know, just because you ride cruisers all the time or whatever, you should still be able to get on something else and get down the road sufficiently with it. You know, who knows when you might need to get on something else? Like,
exactly.
That being said, you know, isn't there like the weird statistic that the first 3 months of a new bike, you have a higher crash rate just because it's unfamiliar to you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So. I'm not talking about for beginning riders. I'm just talking about anyone who wants to ride in general.
Right.
You know, you should be comfortable on just about anything. Enough to get by, at least. You know.
And learn.
Yeah.
Nope.
Oh, you were looking at me like you wanted the mic. I don't know. Anyone else have anything to say on that?
I think in terms of the gap, it's all perception. If you do well at MSF, you might leave with the perception that, oh, hey, I'm pretty good at this motorcycling thing, you know? But just like being a teenager, you think you know everything because... You think you know everything because you don't know how much you don't know, right? So you get out of that class and you're just like, oh, it's not that hard. I did okay. I can ride whatever I want. And then you get on the 600RR, you target fixate and drive off a cliff, you know?
Isn't that something kind of like what you did? Didn't you target fixate and total your bike?
Yeah. That happened. Zing. It was not a 600RR, but it was EX500, but yeah.
Details.
See, but hey, I'm speaking from experience. You can take my word for it, I guess. So, you know, you'll get overconfident.
Would you listen to yourself?
I would listen to myself. If I could go back in time, I'd be like, you fucking idiot. You know what I mean? Like,
point to Adrian.
So, yeah, it might give you a sense of overconfidence just achieving it. But I think that if you're an intelligent person, you'll realize that you have to understand your own...
That's banking a lot on the intelligent person mm-hmm. aspect.
You have to understand. Well, I mean, like, I was unsteady, and then I guess I was, like, somewhat good, and I learned somewhat quickly, but I was still dumb. But, you know, a lot of it goes into it. You just have to recognize the fact that when you're a new rider, the ceiling is so far above you, you just have to try and take it easy, you know?
And every time you reach a new ceiling in your riding abilities, there's another one. I swear.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Always learn a new technique or some other way to go into the lean just a little more efficiently.
Yep.
I guess the question is, how do we get certified so we can be making that money?
That money.
What money?
I'm already taking people down to the parking lot, teaching them how to ride. Shoot, I want that 250.
Girl,
you can just put up an ad on Craigslist. Get some rich kid to pay you. There you go.
Well, there's nothing stopping.
Speaking of Craigslist,
there's actually private lessons that will satisfy it too.
Yeah.
Speaking of Craigslist,
you've got a porn pic.
Yeah, I'm getting all hot and bothered by this porn pic.
Describe.
I'm
this
glad
to
I
us.
Can't see you right now.
So, basically, for Megan's bike porn pick of the week, I'm looking here at a 97 GS500E Frankenbike, and it's really interesting looking, but let me just describe the level of squidliness inherent here. It's a naked bike. It's got a tiny little nothing pipe on it, a little shorty pipe. It's probably loud as shit. It's got it's a 1000RR tail on it. So it has like a sport bike rear end, and then there's like a black bandana wrapped around the rear seat. And it's painted Plasti-Dip black, and it's got a red Monster energy drink on the side. So
nothing says squid more than a giant Monster energy drink.
I know, right? That is like the squidliest thing that can possibly exist. But
says the one who's got
right
stickers.
Hey. No, that means I'm legit as
they
fuck.
They aren't stickers, man.
I'm legit as fuck.
You get
fuck.
A good
you guys
horsepower
don't even
per
know.
Sticker.
Do you guys want me to read it or what?
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
All right. Okay. Let me try and make the best of the poor punctuation here. Okay. Bought this 97 GS500E, not running in September, bike runs now. Paid for a carb rebuild kit and clean, all that was done by North Bay Motorsports Tech. Added an 05 CBR 1000RR Repsol tail with custom seats made from original GS solo seat with black bandana in rear seat. Also has a K&N 2-to-1 intake and carbon fiber shorty ZPZ slip-on. I also plastic dipped bike black, which can be, the letter B, peeled off if you don't like the color. Tech let me know clutch is good and shifts nice and also oil is good. Do have some original parts and that I will add along with 2 quarts of oil and new filter for later oil change. I have ridden and started the bike. The cold drain battery so won't completely turn over. Will need to haul away. The reason this bike is cheap is because I don't have time to do paperwork to register it. The last owner never registered it in California and it's registered non-op in Nevada. He also did keyless starts / light switch. This bike only needs to be registered in gas cap and turn signals. Like I said, I don't have the time as I'm leaving to boot camp in January. Just want to get what I paid for the bike for Xmas. First $320 takes bike. Please text as I'm real busy.
Isn't your scam alert just blaring right
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
Show it to Jake. What about your opinion? Does it look like a cool bike?
It does look kind of cool.
Right?
And then I want you to
pass it around so everyone can see.
Kind of.
I think it looks kind of cool.
My red flag is
it looks like someone
raised.
A 23-year-old from the Valley would ride without a helmet.
That's exactly what it looks like.
All right, we're passing it around.
Oh,
Megan.
That's interesting.
Oh, and then it's sold like the same day that it got posted, didn't it?
Oh, that's quite interesting.
Oh, he put sold on the ad.
Yeah, but they didn't take the ad down, so it doesn't count.
Das schon.
Well, let's go knock on his door.
It's a nice looking bike.
But I think the point we're making here with the porn pick of the week is that we look for bikes under 500 that have potential for somebody that aren't a ton of basket
it
case.
It costs $500 to go and pay the man. Then you got to get it home. It needs a battery, a gas cap, turn signals, registration.
It's probably got like $10,000 in that registration
that's
fees.
Best
and that's
scenario.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So
no,
that's,
it said non-opt.
It said it's non-op in Nevada.
Non-op, but then you have to do the title transfer.
Yeah, it's non-op in Arizona or whatever.
Yeah.
It would cost $200.
And since it's not a California bike, like, what's the rule with it? Like, it has... We don't smog bikes, but if it's, like, a 49 state, it has to have something in order to be registered here.
Yeah, it has to have so many thousand miles on the odometer.
Yeah, it has to have less than... And, no, more than 7,500. Yeah. Or it has to be some other thing.
A 50-state model.
Oh, yeah. It has to be 50-state or have more than 7,500 miles.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't have either of those, you cannot register it here in California.
Well, couldn't you, if you were some unscrupulous individual, just add miles?
Yeah. If you take a cordless drill, a zip tie, and the odometer cable, you can add miles. Not that we'd ever condone something like that.
Can you take miles back
Can you take them off? Is that possible?
No, you cannot take them off.
You can buy a new gauge cluster, and that'll be that.
Goodness.
So, again,
and aren't there,
takes about 24
aren't
hours.
There right. problems too sometimes with like transferring state titles, especially if it's the salvage? Or I know I've had
Not
friends
always.
With cars that I've had issues with that. Like
I got my F3 97 F3. It was registered in Wisconsin, and I just all I had to do was find the engine number because it was originally a California model. So I just had to go to the DMV, showed them the engine number, and they just did the title transfer. It was no big deal.
Okay, so I found a backup porn of the week.
Yeah, I think the previous one was a nose pick of the week.
Well, I've given this one to Adrian to see what he thinks. There is no picture.
There's no picture here.
Yay!
So you want to describe it?
It's like softcore then.
Yeah,
it's like it's the erotic literature.
Like, yeah.
It's the 50 Shades of Grey. Sorry.
50 Shades of Cowie. The KLX 650R. The bike is rough. It ran last year. I tried. Oh man, the spelling's bad. To start it and it wouldn't start. I'm selling it as I don't have time to get it running. I also trade for something smaller but running. Hit me up. Email or text. A KLX 650R for $350.
Non-running.
He tried.
He tried.
At least
97
tried.
KLX.
I tried.
It's not running. Cowie's notorious to blow up. Eek. I'd get the wheels off of it, maybe.
Yeah.
Really?
You know something else about this that I don't?
Yeah.
No, we can all agree that you're never going to find a perfect running bike for $500. The question is, can you find something for under $500 that for a couple $100 you can keep it running for a couple years?
Sure.
And is a good project bike to learn on, and you're not going to keep investing more and more money into it.
Not a money pit.
Not a money pit. And that's what I think these two bikes are.
Actually, this one sets off money pit in my mind.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to agree with money pit.
I found
one.
A really good one the other day, Liza, and it just said motorcycle, and it was like, oh, this was on the slugs thing. Did you see this?
No.
It was like motorcycle, and there was no picture. It says, doesn't run, don't know what it is, don't care, want it out of my garage. And that was it.
Sounds like an angry ex-wife.
That's what I
yeah. Yeah. That's
exactly I'd be like, oh, damn, I'd scoop that shit
running,
up.
So the fact that it doesn't.
He means the motorcycle.
There's something else wrong in that one.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's not something simple.
And what was. We were talking earlier about, I think I saw a Craigslist ad about the guy who had a wife says he has to sell his Harley.
No, either
I go or the bike goes.
No,
oh yeah,
the Harley goes or she goes, and the dude posted both of them up in the same ad. Yeah. Take your pick.
He posted pictures of the bike with her on it.
5,800. Take your pick.
Bike has low miles. Wife, not so much. It's not the years, it's the miles, or something like that.
Jimmy's ex-girlfriend gave him the ultimatum: sell the bike, or we're gonna break up.
And they broke up.
And he has a Vulcan 500.
Yeah, Jimmy.
So, nice job. Good going, Jimmy.
If you're ever in the market for Ducatis, hit some of the Ducati mailing list because they're very prone to the wife forcing sell the bike.
Yeah, we found that out today.
Okay.
Really?
Hey, this brought up an interesting subject we were talking about earlier with somebody who has an ex-wife. Why would anyone give an ultimatum, me or the bike? I mean, really, why?
They're selfish.
Jealousy.
Selfish people.
Has anyone ever had somebody do that to them?
No. I've had girls
refuse
to
be with them in the
first
place.
Like,
we wouldn't get together with them in the first place if it was going to come to that.
Well, maybe, but Jimmy got the bike during the relationship.
Well.
So it was, I don't know.
Something had to go.
I don't know.
I just remember when I was working at a custom shop here in town. My boss was building a custom chopper for a client. And the wife came in, because this was like, you know, they're spending like $25,000 on this bike, right? And the wife came in and had a meeting with my boss and said, look, you better make sure you put a back seat on this bike, because I don't want my husband to have an excuse that he can just go off anytime he wants without me. I need to be able to say, I'm coming too. Now, I don't know if any of y'all have ever seen a custom chopper with a back seat. It just doesn't happen.
It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. So here's what he did. He did put a back seat on it and rear passenger pegs. But then he put custom pipes that ran right up on the thigh. Had she ever tried to get on the back, she would have regretted it. But we know for a fact she never did, because she was happy that she could threaten to go for a ride. But she never actually did, because they never came back and said, what the hell? So everyone was happy.
No, Andrew was saying today that when he was part of the Ducati mailing list, he said every, like, 5 or 6 emails, there'd be one like, hey, selling my bike because the ex-wife wants to take it in the divorce or something like that. And his analysis of it was that that's the best way to take someone down and kill him. The killing stroke would be taking the bike. And in a bitter divorce. And so he was like, I had to quit the Ducati mail.
No, the killing stroke is to cut the brake lines on the bike.
Well, yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Crush the soul first.
We also, we have another shout out we wanted to say, too. And this is from Sean. And he commented on our 1.5 episodes ago, our Revivinating and Gasnicity. And, he basically said he likes our show, but he wants us to talk more about tools that we use and go into more detail about stuff we do to actually get bikes running, not just, you know, bullet list. So, I don't know. What are some of your favorite tools you've learned how to use in the garage? Jake, go. What's one of your favorite tools?
You've been learning
how to use all sorts of stuff here.
Allen wrenches, and I'm not exactly sure what its name is, but I really like the screwdriver that can do anything. I know it's not very specific.
The impact driver? Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, the impact driver.
That thing's sweet.
Everybody loves an impact driver.
Remember when we were trying to get the side cover off the engine, and we were just like, the impact driver won't get it. What will? And then it was like, oh wait, this is all reverse threaded.
Right, it's reverse threaded for your crankshaft.
So we'd been like... came off once we... turned it the right way.
Yeah, I think my favorite tool ever, probably air gun. First time we were taking it apart and we had to pull off a clutch basket. It's, you know, big 22-24 millimeter, about 70 pounds of torque, really on there. I'm like, oh, I'm dreading it, have to do the clutch. I was over at a friend's shop and he's like, oh, hold on a second. Pulled out his air gun, popped on the socket, right on off. I nearly came. It was just like, oh my. and we were done.
Thanks for that.
I think that's the definition of motosexual.
Nice. Yeah, it could be one.
Yeah.
Fetish for tools.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. How else would you
I don't get
it?
Too often, but one of my favorite tools here is the blowtorch over there. Blowtorch and a hammer to get those stuck things unstuck and those unbended things bent.
I don't think I have a favorite tool because I'm. No, this is social hour for me. I just talk to people.
You know what my favorite tool is? I don't know if I've never used any of your guys, but I have a big ass breaker bar. That's my favorite tool. And it's really good for getting, you know, your axle nuts off and also chasing people away who try to steal your bike.
I thought you had a big-ass knife for that.
I've upgraded to a breaker bar. It's more badass, dude.
I know what my least favorite tool is, and that's the sanding thing. That's my least favorite one.
Watching that's you sand favorite. Makes me want to get a little circular sander. Like,
I do have one I can bring down to the top.
With the breaker bar.
I might actually finish this fairing.
With a breaker bar versus a knife, like, you can't stab a dude who's stealing your bike, but you might be able to break his hand. The breaker bar and get away with it. So, there's that.
It'll crash your bike, though.
No. No. You just go up next to him and give him a good whack and just grab the handlebars. Fall right off the other side.
I want to see a show of hand, everyone here, who has their own toolkit at home.
Everyone
except for
can everybody
Jay.
Be vocal about that?
I can fix a broken sink.
Oh yeah, I should stop
saying
show hand.
Yeah.
Yep. I wanted to share my experience when I first started out working. I couldn't afford a lot because, you know, there's good tools and there's crap tools, right?
Harbor Freight status.
I found it was best to buy one of those giant crappy Chinese like toolkits that had everything.
Harbor Freight.
Because I found that the stuff I used a lot that went bad, I then just replaced those with the good ones. So I had a whole selection of stuff available to me. I mean, I don't say you have to buy everything good. I think you start out with the crap and then replace with good. And I wanted to share too that when I was living in Boston and riding my motorcycle year round.
In the snow.
Crazy.
I was poor and trying to like work on it myself, and that was part of when I started learning how to work on it. And I kept borrowing one of my roommate's tools from her toolbox. And I guess it was driving her nuts. Well, for Christmas that year, she went down to one of the used tool bins and bought me my own toolkit. Of, you know, like some basics, some pliers, some needle nose, a screwdriver, of just these old used tools that she got for super cheap. I still have some of them in here. And you know how tools are kind of a personal thing? For me, you guys don't know, but some of these tools in there mean a lot to me because they were given to me when I was young and they were some of my first tools. And that's a place a lot of people don't think of to go to a used tool shop. There's a lot of cool tools that you can buy. I just know a lot of people come here for help and don't actually have their own toolkits at home and should be seeing what we use here and then going out and buying their own and building up their own toolkit. So every city is going to have a used tool shop, and some even have tool rentals, like a library, like a tool library. Done it up in Berkeley. I've gone to the tool library there.
Where's the tool library?
I think it's on MLK.
Really?
Yeah.
Check it out.
I think the Santa Cruz used tool place does rentals as well.
Right. And you're also a good place for tools are the flea markets. Find, you know, great prices for basically anything you need.
Good prices.
Actually, now that you got me thinking about reminiscent tools and tools with memory associated with them, this one I kept trying to steal from my parents as I was trying to learn to wrench. And every time I was leaving the house, they'd be like, they'd check that this tool was still on the rack, that I didn't take it off to school with
what
me.
What tool is this that was so desirable?
Probably one of the best tools for, you know, anything almost. Parallel jaw pliers. Huh. So
what are those?
I don't think we have a set of those here.
Yeah, they're jaws that move in parallel so they can adapt to any nut no matter how stripped. And they're finely adjustable, so it's not like channel locks where they come, you know, pinch at an angle. You get a flat surface on both sides.
They don't close on an axis or a central axis with a bolt in the middle. They just move along a track.
Exactly.
I actually have a set of those that were donated to me.
Yes. And aren't they awesome?
They are quite awesome.
I think I have to get some now. That's really cool.
I don't know. I don't develop attachments to stuff like that. That's just me. I don't know.
Yeah, but aren't tools empowering? Don't you want your own?
Princess doesn't care about tools.
I've got the king over here to do the work.
You have a me?
She's like, I got my nail file. I'm good. That's the only tool I need.
I'm just going to sit here and look pretty while people get used to it.
Thanks, honey.
So I kind of wanted to ask everybody about their like biggest facepalm moment when either repairing or fixing or working on a bike or even riding. Biggest like, oh my god, I can't believe I just did that. Not really get hurt or anything, but just like biggest bonehead move you've ever done.
It's too bad we don't have flip flop in here.
Like, right. Like when you're a kid on your BMX and you first time you try a ramp to ramp jump.
Sure.
Oh, that ends badly.
I think mine was the impact driver with the side on the side cover of the engine.
That's the biggest bonehead move you can think of?
Well, I was at it for such a long time and I was like, what the fuck is going on with this? And I walked away and I got really pissed off. I walked away, I was like, wait a second. It's reverse threaded. Oh, shit. And it came off right away. I don't know. I just felt really stupid because the day before I was like, don't forget, Megan. It's reverse threaded.
Of course.
That's nothing, dude. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to go. I had an 05 ZX6R. It's a 636. And the master cylinders are notorious for failing. So instead of deciding to buy a whole master cylinder, I was going to sell the bike soon. So I said, well, I'll just get a rebuild kit and do the rebuild. And it was a guy's old track day bike, and he had some CRG levers on it. And for those of you who don't know, aftermarket levers may be shaped differently from stock levers. And in the master cylinder, what actuated the brake was there is a little ball pivot joint with a little stick coming out of it. And when you pulled the brake, it pushed on that to actuate the master cylinder like a piston.
And when you talk like this, it turns me on.
You just like pistons.
And so I did the rebuild kit, and that included a new little ball and stick that goes in the top of the master cylinder that touches the brake lever, right? So what happened was I swapped them out, and I'm about to go for a ride with some friends. I'm riding downtown Santa Cruz right on the street next to the courthouse. I can't remember which one it is, but it was next to the courthouse, and I'm just riding.
Water Street.
It's the one with the bridge. So
it's Water Street.
Yeah. So I was on that one, and I'm just riding, and then all of a sudden, my brakes just turn on all the way, and I do a stoppy, and I'm like, what the fuck happened, right? And the front wheel is locked, and I can't move the bike because it weighs like 500 pounds or something, and the front wheel is like the brakes are just locked all the way, and I can't move it. So I'm in the middle of the road, and I'm like, fuck, what do I do? And everyone's all pissed off at me, and some guy is like, hey, you need some help? And I got a wrench, and I just opened up my master cylinder bleeder valve, and then just pushed it off the side of the road.
That's happened to me, too.
Yeah. And I found out what happened was, because the guy had aftermarket levers, he took the little rod with the ball on the end and the ball joint, and he shortened it. And what happened was, mine was about a quarter to an eighth of an inch too long. And what happened was the brake was still actuating just a slight amount, even when it was resting. And that meant that it was heating up. And eventually it heated up so much that the fluid got so hot that it expanded enough to just turn the brakes on. And I couldn't get it off. And I felt like such a fucking idiot. And but I just took the rod and I shortened it and it was fine. And then I sold the bike. So
just solves all of the problems.
Yeah. I took a nail file and a vice grip and I was
see,
just
nail files come in handy.
Yeah. So
I can think of an aha tool that everyone here, I think, has experienced except for Jake yet, and she will.
Yay.
And I know that everyone, the first time they learn this, they're like, wow. Steel wool and WD-40 on chrome.
Oh, yeah.
I'm against this.
No, you got to use mother's aluminum polish and steel wool.
Well, I'm just saying you can take some pretty spotty chrome and revivinate it.
Yes.
Buff it out with
steel wool. I've seen people here doing that on nice chrome.
No.
At your instruction.
Nuh-uh. Not on nice chrome.
Yeah.
Maybe part of it was nice, and I'm just trying to make nice part look as just like the not nice part and find a medium.
It makes me die a little inside when I see steel wool on chrome.
Well, what would your preferred method be, Doug?
Something else.
New chrome?
No, use a buffer or something. If it's really, really rusted and pitted, sure.
I want to explain the quad aught, the 4.0 steel wool with the WD-40 is not abrasive. And that's what can take down the rust. And Jake, you're going to learn this and you're going to have an aha moment.
Okay, then.
Donut, any boner moves?
It's pretty self-inflicted. One of these days, I decided I was going to take the muffler off my little ninja. Doug helped me out with that.
And I'm kind of snickering the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'll play along.
So he helped me take the muffler off. And
and why did you want to take it off?
I just hear how it sounds. Exactly. Yeah, it sounds great.
I said that with a straight face.
It sounded great. Right. So I went on a ride with Megan, and we're about, God. I don't know, maybe 15 miles up Highway 9, when the noise of this muffler just got to my head, and I just started screaming in my helmet. It was so bad.
It sounded like
it was so
if you were to
bad.
Record an episode of The Jetsons, and then record the car, and then play it and fast forward. God. That's how it was bad. Yeah, something like that. It whistled.
God, it was so bad.
So it was basically no crossover, just two headers sticking out the.
I think after the ride, I was like, dude, you.
I was
like
you could hear you. We could hear you going, and it was like loud as good as long as it sounds
good.
Good, right?
Yeah, and so it did not sound. Good.
That was the facepalm.
Yeah, perfect.
This sounds
perfect
terrible.
Baseball. This sounds horrible.
You were so excited too the first time you turned it on.
Yeah,
you're like,
man.
Oh my god, your bike's so loud.
250 ninja to like thousands.
Done it. We actually used to joke or we'd take bets. What's he gonna take off his bike this week?
Yeah, I know. Every time I come in here, Doug would be like, "What are you taking off today, Donut?
Yeah, which side covers are you gonna take off today?" So I got a pretty good bonehead move. When I first got my DRZ Supermoto. That was the first bike I got that I could actually stand up on it, right? And so it's like 2 weeks in, and every time I stand up on the thing, the fucking engine dies. And Adrian, you remember I was texting you about this. I'm like, Adrian's got a DRZ. So I'm like, there's got to be some kind of something under the seat. Like when I get off, my ass gets off the seat, there's got to be something that my ass is untriggering.
Oh, I think.
And he asked me to ride it down the street. And I stand up, nothing happens.
It was totally fine. So I take off.
And I'm like, no.
I take off the seat, and yeah, sure enough, the reg is under there, and I'm like, oh, it's loose. Okay, so I like fasten it down and put the thing back, and I get back on the bike, and fucking it dies again. I'm like, what the hell is... I'm like, okay, there's got to be some kind of sensor that senses weight. And this is like a 2 or 3 week ordeal. Adrian's like, I don't know. So I'm going down the road one day, and then it's happening on Graham Hill. It's like 50 miles an hour. I'm just standing up real quick, straight up, and I look down, and the fucking kickstand is getting actuated. The kill switch for the kickstand. My heel was hitting it when I was standing up.
Oh,
it wasn't happening to Liza, but I literally had to pull over and kind of just, you know, I didn't want to laugh at myself too hard.
That's not what I
was
thought it was.
Laughing at myself on the side of the road because it felt so stupid. After letting all these people know there's something wrong with my bike. There's something wrong with my bike.
You texted me, you're like, I just figured it out.
Yeah, like, you know what it was the whole time? Yeah, so that's one of my big bonehead claims to fame.
Something similar happened to me with my bike. Every time I would back it up, it would die. And I'm like, why is it dying whenever I back it up? And then I decided to go look at the battery, and the only thing holding the terminals together, the contact on the terminal, was my butt. So every time I stood up to back it up, it would die. So I thought that's what it was, but never mind.
So I do have one, and this is going to hit the Wayback Archive, and I know we're almost out of time, so I'll keep it short. I don't think anybody here has ever seen even the photo evidence of this, but when I started out, I took my brand new bike, EX500, new to me, and it was the coolest thing on the planet.
Was it Megan's?
Was it mine?
EX500? No, I actually blew that one out.
Passed around more than a...
Yeah, that's one of the...
never mind.
Unpolite phrase bikes. I was going to go out to the club with a Halloween costume, and if everybody remembers Snow Crash from Stephenson, there's a motorcycle in it with a nuclear bomb as a sidecar.
Cool.
So I was going to do that as a costume, and the girl I was seeing at the time was going to do YT.
Awesome.
And, of course, I had an EX500. Hell, I'll build a sidecar.
Nice.
So I took my extensive, at the time, motorcycling and repair skills, and I built a wooden sidecar and tried strapping it to the frame. And I had a wheel that turned, and it sort of had a built-in frame. And, of course, I had friends there with cameras to take pictures of this as I went down the road, and it disintegrated in about 12 to 15 feet, pulled the bike sideways. Oh. I did not crash, amazingly enough, but there was pieces of that sidecar for a good 35 feet.
Yeah. That's...
Needless to say, I did not make it to the club that night with the sidecar.
At no point in the story was I thinking this might work.
Yeah, I know.
And you say you have pictures of this.
There is a picture of me taking off, yes.
I think there should be a space on the wall.
Can you get it to us?
I can see if I can get it to you. Yeah.
That'd be great. Even if we could scan it.
I agree.
I'll probably
it's got to go up on a website. It.
Yeah, that is definitely frame-worthy. Zoe, any stories?
Well, probably. Oh, gosh, yeah. The aha moment when I realized that I was an idiot. At least sometimes. I was redoing the clutch on the Honda Shadow, and I ended up taking the clutch plates out, putting it all back together, thinking I had it right. Go to start it up, and it kicks a couple times, and the bike just dies. And I go to kick it again, nothing. I think, what the fuck's going on? So immediately I think, okay, well, it's kind of something I did, but then why is electrical cutting out? So I start troubleshooting electrical. Needless to say, I didn't get anywhere on it that day. Ended up being almost like a week ordeal. I ended up borrowing Liza's rat bike and coming back to it. And sure enough, the problem was somewhere within the clutch. Dismantle it back down in the clutch, take it out, and I think it was one of the plates was just... Oh, no. It was pushed out. So the clutch wasn't completely engaged when you were trying to screw it in. So it was actually trying to, like... I'm trying to find the right word for it. It was just pushed out enough. It wasn't in the groove. So it looked like it was laying flush when it wasn't laying flush. So when the bike started, it was actually grinding the clutch against the...
Basket.
So that's why the bike wouldn't start.
I remember that. That's when your bike was here for a couple weeks, right?
Right. So
I think at one point you cried, Zoe.
Multiple points.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So I ended up actually going through the starter motor. I pulled the starter motor out. I cleaned that. I went through the starter circuit. I mean, I cleaned it up, and I learned a lot, but do it right the first time. If it doesn't go in right, if something's not right... If you just have that sense, step back, look at it again. Don't get ahead of yourself.
And Jake, there was an actual true lesson that you learned. Why are you showing me your hairy belly button?
I'm stretching. I'm exhibiting.
I'm sorry,
myself.
I was quite distracted. What was the actual real lesson you learned today when you're taking something apart and then you need to put it back together?
Photograph what it looked like before you took it apart so that you know exactly how it goes back together.
Yeah.
Although Liza is not a believer in that. She just likes to take it apart.
Well, she doesn't like it doing the right way the first time.
I like puzzles.
Yeah. And then you have that one nut left over.
And then the puzzle is figuring out where
it
went.
It'll
be fine.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about
it. Dude, I always freak out when I end up with more screws after I'm finished. I'm like, okay.
Oh. In addition to photographs, one of the things I like doing is Ziploc bag, masking tape with a Sharpie, and label it as it comes apart. Because unless you're putting it back together that day, you're going to have to store it. So it's much better to write, you know, head bolts, head gasket.
For dudes
that
like
sort of
me
thing.
Who have a horrible memory, a short-term memory, it
Were
helps
you again?
A lot. Huh?
Another, actually brings up another good tool that we actually have here, are egg cartons and muffin tins. When you're disassembling, and then you can put stuff out in order.
Yeah.
So those are good
transmissions and everything else. That's wonderful for.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up tonight's podcast. But please send us emails. We will respond and we will give shout outs.
I would like to hear some of our listeners' bonehead moves.
Yeah.
They're always funny stories. We will read them.
Yeah, totally.
Give us an email.
Give us podcast ideas.
You'll be
give
famous.
Give us topics.
We promise.
unfortunately, no more t-shirts, but whatever.
We might have another
maybe
mailer
a Christmas
pretty
special.
Soon. maybe we should do like an email contest if someone can
you might feel
provide
generous.
Something for us.
Yeah.
Then we'll send them something.
T-shirts are for sale for $20 if you would like a Santa Cruz recycle t-shirt.
They make great snot rags.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean oil rags.
That's not snot.
They dry up tears.
So email us.
Us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Rate us on iTunes. And does that cover all of... Oh, and
motorcyclesandmisfits.com.
Leave us comments and
yes,
shit.
Yes, leave us
and
comments.
And check out our sponsor, motobandido.com.
Yeah. Call me a douchebag.
That's B-A-N-D-I-D-O.
Yeah. Okay, so this is Megan.
Liza.
Jake.
Lucas.
Krispy Kreme. Donut. Adrian.
Zoe.
Is that Creepy Cream or Krispy Kreme? Jeez.
Oh, I like that.
And Douglas. Did everybody sign
listening.
Off?
Cool.
And we're clear.
Cool, yay.